Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer, the Union Tribune. Jay Posner, sports editor of the Union Tribune. The trade deadline has come and gone, and many, many Padres, minor leaguers, and even major leaguers have gone. And there are three new ones, one very important one. Players, the new players will make their debut tonight. We are taping this on Wednesday, August 3rd, first day of Juan Soto. So it's day one JS. Jay Posner.
Kevin, you've been doing anything the last couple days?
I'm in a dream state right now. So I can only imagine what AJ Preller, where he's at. He's much more, I think, I don't know that AJ ever sleeps. So
I was going to say, you think he sleeps less than you do or I do?
I don't know about you, but his is by choice.
Mine's not always by choice, but it's really something.
I marvel at people that can function at a high level like he does. Like, I don't even want to say he's sleep deprived because he doesn't do it. I've told stories on here before about, you know, getting late night calls, texts, and certainly people that actually work with him and for him get far more. But anyway, here it is. Yeah. It is that, though. Hey, look. That is a part of why this deal got done. He never, ever stops. It was, like I said, look, it was educated guessing. I said all along I thought this deal would get done. And the only reason I did was I felt like he felt it had to get done. And if AJ Preller felt something had to get done, it was like he wasn't going to stop.
Well, right. And it was like, how much do I have to give up? Okay, I'll give that up almost. I mean, it was, but it wasn't like, it was funny last night. I was at the ballpark all day with you and Jeff and Bryce for most of the time. And I stayed and I left after the seventh inning of the second game. And I figured I could get home in time for the end, which I did. And as I was driving home, listening to Jesse Agler describe the strike three that wasn't called to the Rockies. And he said it was Adrian Morahone, and I had to think for a second. I was like, oh yeah, they didn't trade Adrian Morahone. He was like the one guy that seemed to be mentioned in all these talks that didn't get dealt. So I guess we can say that AJ didn't trade everything for Juan Soto and Josh Bell and even Josh Hader the day before, and we'll throw in Brandon Drury as well because I do think he can be. He can help this team. As we were looking at potential lineups last night on your computer, we said, hey, Drury could fit in here or whatever. So, yeah, it was like, well, the Padres are going to have to give up, you know, Gore and Hassel and Wood and to be able to even think about getting Juan Soto. And I think pretty much everybody was kind of the idea of, okay, if that's what it takes. And I think, you know, that's why – and I know you wanted to talk about this, and I'll let you get into it, but that's one reason we had the show name. This show is named what it is. The idea of the organization, and look, the Padres don't have homegrown players that play for them, but they have players all over the league. Sometimes they brought in good players, sometimes maybe not so much, but they have players all over the place because the Padres built a farm system. I guess Morahone counts as a homegrown player, but the Padres built a farm system. And their decision is to use that farm system to acquire veteran talent as opposed to waiting for the rookies to sort of, you know, become second and third year players and grow together and win together and all that stuff. They're tired of waiting, just like San Diego is tired of waiting for something to happen. And they have decided it didn't work out in 2015. There were some deals then that weren't so wise, but it seems like they've taken a better approach now. And you have a chance to get Juan Soto. I don't know. You got to get Juan Soto, right?
I can't think of very many players. I don't know. You could throw out to me a bunch of names, and I would say, nope, 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 nope.
Right.
I can't think of very many players that you go all in like this on. And by all in, you know, I think that's a term. That's a term that teams bristle at because they would say, wait, we got Juan Soto for the next year and the year after. And yeah. Okay, fine. They got Brandon Drury. They upgraded basically their bench. And be that Brandon Drury is starting four times a week or Will Myers is starting four or they're both starting four because you're also then giving Manny Machado a day off or a DH day. Whatever it is, I've been writing here for a while. Started at the beginning of the season, took some time off because there was no depth. I mean, zero depth. We thought that they started with no depth. They had zero depth. Anyway, recently, like, looking to get some players back and how excited Bob Melvin was. suddenly his bench is either Brandon Drury or Will Myers. You know, you give a guy a day off and it's like, wow. And now hopefully for them, it's about competition and it's about the best player will play. But unbelievable. Right. Jeff Sanders, who knows, you know, Jeff doesn't know much, but one thing he knows is Padres minor leaguers. Okay. And it was hilarious that like the Padres traded like 20 of their top 10 prospects yesterday because guys kept moving up and then they were gone, moving up, then they were gone. So what? Like, honestly, it's, I don't even understand why it's a discussion, but it's the beauty of sports is everything is a discussion. And there are even people, get this, that got in touch with me over the last 24 hours, upset that Eric Hosmer was traded. I swear to you, I'm not making that up.
Now I don't believe you. Now I really think you are sleep deprived. So I'm not buying that. I have to tell you, one of the guys in the office.
It was two. Okay.
One of the guys in the office asked me, what is Sanders going to write about now on his minor league report now that they traded everybody? And I said, well, the first thing he's going to do for this Sunday is do a new top 10 among their prospects, assuming he can find 10. But I'll leave it to Jeff to come up with that. And I know there are some guys. I know Luis Camposano, who just lost his number overnight, as I just posted a story from you, that Nick Martinez has agreed to give up his number 22 to Juan Soto, and Martinez is going to wear number 21, which happens to be the number that Camposano has worn the couple times that he's been up. But that, you know, that's the way things go. You're not here, your number disappears. So, Josh, I will say, Josh Bell is definitely not wearing the number he's been wearing in Washington because that was number 19. So he will have to find another number. But I got a feeling that a guy like Josh Bell, going from playing 5 seasons for the Pirates, 2 seasons for this version of the Nationals, will wear just about any number to be able to be in San Diego playing for a team that is, you know, in all likelihood going to the playoffs. And, you know, he's with Juan Soto still and soon to be with Tatis and with Machado and all these other guys. So give Josh Bell number 72 or something, and I'm sure he'll say, okay, where, you know, just tell me when to bat.
This is Juan Soto day for sure, but I'm probably most interested to find out how grateful Josh Bell is that he was included in this trade to be able to go to a contender with Juan Soto.
Well, look at it this way. He's probably just think how mad Luke Voit is and turn that around. And that's how Josh Bell is. I got to think
So Luke Voit gave the media yesterday a lot of really good quotes like Luke Voit does. About an hour before he was traded. It's just one of the little things that you just, and at that time, this is a guy who cares a lot and, you know, is used to winning where he's been, or at least it to have been a culture, the Cardinals, the Yankees, and, you know, very important to him. He takes losing really hard. He was so excited. And
I bet he didn't send you an email about Hosmer. No, but I will say this, Hosmer, you know, look, I'm not going to get into everything that Hosmer has dealt with here because I'm just not, you know how I feel. I know how you feel about it. But the one thing Hosmer should not be criticized for above all else is not wanting to go to the Nationals. That was in his contract. It's every bit his right. You know, look, if you had a contract and I tried to trade and you had a no trade clause to the New York Post, and then I tried to trade you to the New York Post, I can't get upset. How can anybody get upset at you? It's in the contract. It was negotiated.
It's that simple.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it comes down to. And look, if Hosmer didn't want to go there, he doesn't have to go there. And so now, you know, they found a place for him and he'll be in Boston. And which is funny, as you noted, their first game tonight with him is in Kansas City of all
So real quick, before we get to what is really, you know, the important stuff, and that's going forward with this team, and that's Juan Soto, and that's how do these three players that'll join them make them better. On the topic of Eric Hosmer, the Padres are paying virtually all but a few million dollars. I think that the Red Sox are required to pay like the minimum over the time.
Yeah.
But so technically, though, that money is off the Padres' books because the Padres then send a check to. They're not paying. He doesn't still getting a Peter Seidler or whoever it is now, the chief financial officer check from the Padres. He's being paid by the Red Sox, and the Padres are, you know, subsidizing the Red Sox. So I've been getting a lot, as it tends to happen, because even though, you know, if I write a story with really sincere quotes from players about Eric Hosmer, it's me talking about Eric Hosmer, evidently. Couple things. Why did because people are throwing that up as that's how desperate they were to get rid of him. No, it just made sense to get rid of Eric Hosmer. They didn't think they were going to. They actually told him that was not in their plans. And I believe, based on who I heard it from, the people I heard it from, that was sincere. Josh Bell gets thrown into this deal. Oh, okay. Well, now we can do this. And they communicated to Eric Hosmer. It just made sense. There was no time for him here. Okay, the leadership thing. At no time, and I don't mean to turn this into a defense of me, but I do feel like people need to be educated a little bit. At no time did I say, oh, if they lose Eric Hosmer, or did anyone on that team say, they can't win. Right. I mean, he was here as a leader last year and they collapsed, okay? I mean, but that doesn't mean he's not a leader. That doesn't mean that players weren't crying yesterday. That doesn't mean that, like, guys don't love this guy and don't consider him to have been one of the greatest teammates that they have ever had, like, ever. Like, it is so sincere, I can't express it to you. But I guess that when Ha-Sung Kim posts a heartfelt message on Instagram, he's lying. And when Bob Melvin volunteers at how difficult it was to start that first game, he was lying. That Fernando Tatis, blah, blah, blah. They were all lying because Eric Hosmer didn't get vaccinated and hit 220 over a month. So everyone is wrong, but all of you are right about Eric Hosmer being a jackass. Okay.
Here we go. I'm glad we settled that.
Okay.
One thing I wanted to note on the competition part that you mentioned is there are now like maybe five guys playing for three spots, I think you pointed out. And among those guys are Jurickson Profar, who went like 12 for 7 yesterday in the doubleheader, and Ha-Sung Kim. Those guys had 9 hits together in the first game, and Profar had at least one more hit. Two more in the second game. So those two guys, Myers and Drury, you could probably throw Alfaro and Nola into that mix a little bit, because one of them certainly could DH. I don't think we're going to see a lot of that now, but there are a lot of open, and Grisham as well, I think, falls into that category, and he hits 2 home runs yesterday, including the winner in the nightcap. So you know, there is something to be said for if you don't produce, you're not going to play. And I think right now that's sort of the mentality that the Padres, you know, with 60 games left or whatever it is, are going to be taking, because they have other options now. And, you know, maybe it's not fair to take a guy out after he goes, you know, 0 for 8 in a couple of games, but that's probably the way it's going to be, because they're going to have to sort of roll with who's hot and the matchups that Melvin and the front office think is our best. And I don't think we're going to see guys go through prolonged slumps, at least in their lineup on a regular basis. I mean, obviously, Tatis, Machado, Soto, Bell, those guys are playing. But I'm talking, you know, even Cronenworth. But, so, you know, even Cronenworth. And Mazar, but I mean, Mazar is in that category. And Myers. Even a guy like Cronenworth, I mean, look, if he goes into a tailspin, you know, Brandon Drury's perfectly capable of playing second base. So is Ha-Sung Kim. You know, they don't have to stick with anybody really at this point.
And vice versa. If Brandon Drury is Adam Frazier, you know, you would assume that Cronenworth, Kim are there to play.
Absolutely. So. And the DH really helps in this instance. You know, losing Voit, that could hurt. But, you know, he was what he was. He had some big hits. He had some big misses. They have guys to replace him now. There are plenty of places, especially when Tatis comes back, to be able to use the DH. And, you know, I think the interesting thing, and you and I were talking about this yesterday, is what happens with the lineup now. You know, to me, the only decision at the top of the lineup is whether you want to continue to lead off Profar just because he's doing so well. You know, obviously, if he's going to have 5 hits,
You're talking about when after Tatis returns.
This is after Tatis returns. For now, I think it's pretty obvious that Profar is going to lead off. I would think that Soto and Machado are going to be 2-3. I don't know where Cronenworth fits in there, but if I'm making the lineup, I have Soto, maybe Machado, Soto, and Bell, or Soto, Machado, and Bell. Bell's in that order, and then I can go down to Cronenworth, guys like that. But I'm when Tatis comes back, I'm stacking those four guys at the top of the lineup: Tatis, Soto, Machado, Bell. And I'm not messing around with Profar. I'm not messing around with Cronenworth. Those guys, along with Drury and Myers and whoever else is playing, that just lengthens the lineup, as we've discussed before, how short this lineup has been sometimes. Look how long this lineup can be. But I just think if you're a starting pitcher and you've got to come out and face those four guys to start the game, you know, that they're gonna sleep as little as you and I do right now.
I think there's going to – I agree. I mean, Jay, I'm definitely not going to lose any sleep over who's the leadoff hitter if things are going well. And like, if he continues to go with Profar, because Profar is still hot when Tatis comes back, which would be mind-blowing because he'd probably be hitting like 380 by then. Yes. Because you can't keep up the pace that Profar's been going at right now. But anyway, if he's still hot, I mean, the guy's done well all season there. But – then what do you do? Because then, yeah. So does it go Soto, Tatis, now you're batting Machado fourth? Like,
yeah.
Vice versa? So your way is the way. I mean, I really believe that. But, like, regardless, this length, this fictitious, you know, hopeful pretend length that they had is now would appear. Look, if there's ever been a guy that they've traded for that we don't have to bring up the names Adam Frazier and Ryan Ludwig, it's Juan Soto. But it appears that you got that length. When your third and fourth most important trade acquisitions were Josh Bell and Brandon Drury, you had a very good trade deadline, I believe.
Yeah. I mean, and I think Soto is a guy that, you know, people here, including you and I, have seen play somewhat sporadically, I would think, you know, for the most part. I mean, obviously we saw him in the postseason, you know, back a few years when he was, you know, 20 years old and leading the Nationals to the World Series. You never dream at that point that he's going to be on the team that you follow unless you follow the Nationals, because why in the world would he not be with the Nationals for his entire career? The idea that you can get a guy like that at 23 years old, you know, as you said, there are not a lot of guys out there. I would not have traded all the guys they traded this week for Juan Soto. I wouldn't have traded them for instance, Mike Trout, just because Trout at this point in his career is not a guy that I wouldn't trade him for
Aaron Judge.
Give up that much for, you know, Aaron Judge is going to be a free agent at the end of the year, but to get Soto for two and a third years, but three pennant races. And look, if everything falls apart here, and it is San Diego, and it is sports, you can always turn around and trade Soto in a couple of years and restockpile with, you know, a haul like the Padres just gave up.
And don't think that you just made that up. That's definitely in the Padres' minds.
Without a doubt. I'm not that smart. But I think just the idea that we're going to have Soto to watch. I mean, it was sort of one of those things where, like, when Tatis came along, it was like, wow, this is great. We got Tatis to watch every day. And now we have Tatis and Machado to watch every day. Now we have Tatis and Machado and Soto to watch every day, at least as long as one of them can stay off a motorcycle and get in the lineup. But it's just mind-boggling to think. You mentioned they're paying the Red Sox, I think it's $43 million for Hosmer, you know, to play for Boston. And I think it was Darren Smith, who you're on the radio with regularly, and we've both known for a long time. I think he tweeted something yesterday or today. The Padres' payroll not that long ago, maybe in 2010, was $40 million, their entire payroll. They're bankrolling one guy now who's not even here for more than that. And Bryce Miller's written about Peter Seidler and what he's meant to this team. And you know, none of this happens with most of the owners that the Padres have had in their past. And I think that's something.
For most of the owners in baseball now.
Yeah, and that's true. I mean, someone asked me, "Well, how is he paying for all this?" Well, he has a lot of money, which is which is great. I mean, there are people who have a lot of money. Some of them don't like to spend it without being guaranteed that they're going to make a profit or anything. Peter Seidler is pretty, doesn't seem to be like that. He wants to win. If he doesn't turn a profit, he doesn't turn a profit. Now, look, it's not cheap to go to game most of the games, but there are also people are responding. I mean, the game tonight, they were supposed to have 32 or 33,000. They're going to have 44,000. I'm assuming, you know, it's going to be like that most of the rest of the season. I think there's 28 home games left after tonight. And I would think that most of them would be pretty full.
I think that we need, we'll definitely look into this. Someone will. Understand that they will not make back their money this year. But if they win a championship and then next year's season ticket sales and jersey sales, and like it'll be interesting. How many people are going to have 22 already tonight, right? By the Nick Martinez and jersey.
And if they don't win a championship this year, you're still going to sell more season tickets.
But I'm talking about how can this work out for them? Well, also, you know how else it can work out? And I'm not diminishing what Peter Seidler's done. I am praising him for this. What's the worst thing that's going to happen? This thing's a disaster, and then the Padres are only worth $1 billion? Wow. I mean,
No, I mean, nobody's going to hold it. Nobody's going to need to open a GoFundMe or hold it. I'll date myself, hold a telethon for Peter Seidler. But
look it up, kids.
I do think that it's, you know, finally there's a team here, and we've talked since the Chargers left town that is – the Padres, it would have been great if they could have been ready to jump into that chasm right away. It's taken a few years. Last year it didn't turn out very well. This year, gosh, it's so hard to imagine this team not making the playoffs. I guess anything's possible, but they're off to a good start. They find, you know, look, they've won three games this week against the Rockies, which I think it equals their total that they had won the first 11 games against them. So they're taking advantage of what is clearly a bad team. We've got two more with them before they have, you know, go to LA this weekend, and then San Francisco comes here next week. So it's, you know, they can't just sort of rest on this and think they're going to make the playoffs, but I don't feel like they are.
I don't know, Jay. Here's the deal. You're right, but how many teams in the National League are still competing for one of those six playoff spots?
One more. There's one more team competing than is there are available spots. They have to – because Philadelphia and St. Louis are still trying. And so Atlanta, San Diego, Philadelphia, St. Louis, that's four teams. There's only three spots. So one of those teams is going to get left out.
I think it's the Padres and, at this point, the Braves. Like, if the season ended today, the Padres would go to Atlanta for a three-game series for the wild card. And so, basically, I still think, and I don't know what it is anymore, is it 11, is it 12 games back of the Dodgers, that you're competing to host that wild card series is what you're doing. You're trying to be the, you know, number four seed is what you're trying to be at this point.
And the Braves are only 2.5 behind the Mets.
And it doesn't mean that you're not at some point better than the Dodgers. It means that by the time you became a team with this roster, you were whatever it is, a dozen games behind them. So I think they could win all whatever it is left. Is it 9 games against the Dodgers and still finish behind them in the standings? That's how far back they are. So
and they're playing. Obviously, they're playing, you know, this weekend, the three games.
And it doesn't matter, is my point. Like, this is now a playoff roster, and that's what this was about. I believe they were just as likely to not make it as make it before, but because of what we just talked about with there only being 7 teams vying for 6 spots. Yeah. By the way, all of them improved themselves at the deadline. I think A.J. Preller is good for baseball. Everyone, no one stood pat, man. But
I mean, the Dodgers got Joey Gallo. I mean, what could be better than that? Juan Soto, Joey Gallo, it's all the same.
I meant the teams vying for – Dodgers did. Dodgers did stand strangely pat relatively.
It's an interesting situation. And look, it's all – even whatever happens this weekend, it's three games in L.A. I don't think the Padres definitely don't have their best pitchers lined up.
It's not lined up
for for it. I mean, for one thing, Blake Snell is a Dodger killer, and he's pitching tonight. So he won't pitch this weekend. Musgrove, I believe, is pitching tomorrow.
Yep.
So he's not, you know, Snell and Musgrove won't be pitching this weekend. you know, the Dodgers rotation, I don't think is what it is, what it will be in October. Tatis obviously isn't back. So look, it'll be fun this weekend to watch the games and, you know, certainly be emotional. You'll be there on Friday night. It'll be the Dodgers' first home game since the passing of Vin Scully. So, I mean, it's a big weekend. But in terms of the results, look, if the Padres win three, the Dodgers win three, whatever, we've talked about this before, it doesn't mean anything. It all comes down to October. You're going to have a three-game or a five-game or a seven-game series against these teams. And, you know, the idea is to be as well-positioned as you can. And that's where we haven't even talked about Josh Hader. Now you have a guy that goes out there in the ninth inning. We talked, you know, are you confident in anybody coming out of that bullpen? I think you could be pretty confident in Josh Hader.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen it enough. Like, now, of course, I was watching the Padres against him most of the time. But, I've seen it enough. Saw it last night. And you can just watch the guys in the dugout watching Josh Hader pitch. Like, they were on the railing more so than they are usually. And it was, of course, was the ninth inning of a tie game. They would have been. But, like, you could see it. I talked to only one guy. But, yeah, it was pretty cool for them to watch Josh Hader pitching for them.
And know that they don't have to face him anymore.
You just knew that okay, well, the Padres are going to come up with the game tied. Could he float one? Sure, he's done it. But that was Josh Hader out there. That was pretty darn good. Goes without saying, everybody else goes down, and that makes the bullpen better. Luis Garcia pitching like he has for the last couple weeks in the eighth inning instead of the ninth. Wow. Drew Pomeranz started a rehab assignment. Woo! Now, who knows how long that'll have to be, but that's big.
Yeah, look at what Tim Hill's been doing.
Tim Hill, your lefty specialist, who also can get righties out?
He was in a situation the other night. I don't recall exactly where I thought, I'm surprised they're letting Hill stay in here, but he did. And he got out of it. And so you've got him and obviously Morahone. So it seems like there's some more depth now in that bullpen. And as you said, you know, maybe Pierce Johnson, maybe Drew Pomeranz. I think there's some guy named Castillo that used to be part of the organization, but yeah, it does appear brighter. We didn't even mention Nick Martinez. Outside of his uniform, that's another guy that makes things deeper. So it is a much deeper staff right now than it's been. And even without, you know, Gore was hurt anyway. And, you know, the other guys that were traded, I guess Abrams and Ruiz were on the roster. But, you know, those guys aren't going to be missed in terms of this year. Now down the line is a different story.
I look forward this week to, as we're talking about it being better, Mike Clevinger facing the Dodgers, because Mike Clevinger right now is one of my playoff pitchers. Until I look at the fact that the teams that he's been beating have been the Tigers and the Rockies. Now, he's been as impressive as you can be. You can only pitch against who you're pitching against, but this is a compliment. This is me saying, I want to see Mike Clevinger go against the playoff quality team, which the Padres don't have many games against the teams vying for the playoffs left. Besides the Dodgers, they do play the Giants, who you would say are technically still in there. They got three against the Cardinals, who they can't beat for the life of them recently. I look forward to this, to see what he does. I think we know what Sean Manaea is. Sean Manaea could go out in a playoff game and give you five shutout innings, or you could be down 7-0 in the third. Mike Clevinger to me is kind of a I don't want to say key, but I'm very interested to see how the rest of the season goes up. And is Mike Clevinger one of your playoff starters?
Right. And then, so you have Manaea, Clevinger, and Darvish that would be pitching this weekend. And I mentioned we both knew Vin Scully at least a little bit. You covered the Dodgers and traveled with them and spent way more time than I did. I grew up listening to him. I remember when we moved from LA to San Diego when I was a kid, how excited I was that I could still hear the Dodger games in San Diego, and I could still hear Vin Scully and see him on TV. And, you know, there were only a couple guys in my career that I've ever been sort of like, oh my God, I get to talk to this person about, and they were John Wooden and Vin Scully. And Scully, Wooden was on the phone. Scully was on the phone and also in person. Could not have been a nicer person. Tweeted about this today that the only person I can ever remember sending me a written thank you note for a story that I wrote. And it's on the wall right above me. I actually tweeted out the story today that I wrote, which is a nothing special story, but just the idea that he took that and wrote a nice little note, you know, thanking me for that. It's like, I should have sent him a note every day for the rest of my life, thanking him for everything. And so I didn't want to let that pass. I mentioned today also that when I was a kid, I wanted to be Vin Scully, like so many kids. And I ended up going into this side of the business instead. But there was a part of me that, man, if I could be like Vin Scully, nobody could be like Vin Scully. It was good that I picked this business instead. So I wanted to say that.
And what's great is, Jay, that we always say about that he was a nicer human being. But the story that you just told, I won't even add to it, is kind of, yeah, wow, he was. So that's one of the great ones. I got to say this. I do look forward to being there on Friday. The Dodgers do well with ceremonial things. Yeah. This was one of the most important. And we're talking about a franchise with World Series championships and some of the greatest players in the history of the game that played there. Nothing against our statues. Their statues are really good too. But they do ceremony very well. And Vin Scully was so, so, so important to their franchise that I look forward to that. And it'll be an honor to a certain extent to be able to be there and kind of to soak that in. Don't soak many things in this job. And I'm looking forward to that out of paying respect to Vin Scully. So
I really hope the Padres telecast shows that ceremony too, because I think there are so many people who will want to see it, and so I'm hoping for that as well. So anyway, this was good chat, and we'll talk to everybody soon.